You are listening to the Health Hack Podcast, powered by Lumen and hosted by myself, Caroline Pierce. As an athlete, sports scientist, and sports presenter, I am passionate about health and how we can unlock the skills to hack our full potential. Each episode, I'll be joined by a leader in the health and well-being world to learn how they've come to understand their body and turned that knowledge into power that could help you too. Today's guest is a true powerhouse of a personal trainer, named one of the trending fitness stars by Shape magazine. She's a multi-sport athlete, a lead trainer for FitOn app, and the creator of Danielle Pacenti training guides. She is also a new mum. It is wonderful to have the lady herself, Danielle Pacenti, on the show. Danielle, thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
No, me too. And, you know, Danielle and I know one another from the FitOn app. We've both been trainers on it for several years, but it was only fairly recently we filmed on the same day and at the same events and met one another. And I've always, we sort of grab those quick conversations between filming and so forth. So it's really nice to have a proper chat. But first off, you know, you are a new mum and your life has changed quite considerably. You know, you've been a fitness entrepreneur and still are, and there's this added challenge now of having a little baby. So Kenny Pop, you call her, is that right?
Kenny Pop. Her name is Kennedy, but Kenny Pop for short.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cute. She was called Poppy though, wasn't she, the whole time she was in your tummy? So I thought when you had your baby, this baby was going to be called Poppy.
Totally. Everyone thought that too. Everyone's like, it's going to be Poppy. It's going to be Poppy. And then we threw everyone for a loop.
I love it.
But we kept the middle name. So that's why we call her Kenny Pop.
Oh, cute. How is life now?
It is wild. Challenging, beautiful, like kind of all the emotions. It's motherhood is so rewarding and so special, but it is so hard to adjust to like this new life with a little being that you're taking care of and that needs you every second of every day. So it's an adjustment from my old life, but I always tell people I'm like shedding layers of my old self that probably needed to go anyway, and then coming into this like new Danielle.
Wow. And I know, you know, obviously already a personal trainer, but you studied pre and postnatal training as well. So I guess to better serve yourself and your community. And I want to get into all of that. But first of all, one thing, you know, when you watch Danielle's workouts or interact with you on social media, I love how real and authentic you are. You know, we feel like we sweat every step along the way with you, and you know every part of your I'm sure there's many parts of your life you don't show, but lots of your life that you showcase. Why was it so important to you, you know, in your role as a fitness entrepreneur and trainer, to show, you know, so much of the real you, if you like, to your community?
Yeah, I just think that it's important to show the reality. I think it's really easy to log onto social media and find your favorite trainer, or favorite influencer, or favorite personality or celebrity or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it is picture perfect and it's the highlight. And a lot of what we put on our feeds, as you know, is kind of curated, and we have to keep them clean and we have sponsors and partnerships and things. And so it's like, I never want it to feel like a space that other people aren't welcome into, or they don't belong or don't fit. Like, I want everyone to feel that I'm just their best friend, or I'm just, you know, I am their trainer, but also you can come to me for things that are real life and that are hard things, you know? So life isn't picture perfect, and I don't ever want to paint that picture for anyone. I want people to know, like, I too struggle. I have my days, I have good times, I have bad times. I want them to be along for the ride, because the more I involve them, the greater it is for everyone. Everyone feels involved and included. And then in turn, the business does well, because we've been able to kind of curate this community of people who feel welcomed to enter in and work out, but also talk about hard things.
Is there that pressure though, that you've always got to turn up to your community, or, you know, the pros and cons of that? So we've talked about before, like you'll chat away to your phone walking down the street on your runs or whatever, so organically. And for me personally, I was saying to you, I find that almost harder than broadcasting to national television, you know, but to you, it's so natural. But are there some days when you think, oh, I've got nothing to say, or I don't, you know, I just haven't got it in me to share this thing? Because I start conversation, I think, oh, who cares?
Totally.
So what are the sort of pros and cons of being so, you know, there for people, if you like?
Yeah, I think, well, the pros of it is that I genuinely feel like I've gotten so good at it now that I can just log on whenever and be like, you know what? They've seen it all. They have seen everything. So that's the pros, is that we've kind of built this relationship where I'm not nervous. I'm not whatever to get on there and do that. The cons to it is that when I am going through some really hard stuff, it is hard to log on. Like, it's like, I don't even have anything to say, because if I'm in the thick of something, I don't have an outcome. Like, here's what you should do in order to fix it. And I'm a solutions person. So I love to come back after something tumultuous or whatever it is and say, hey, here's what I did that helped me out of it. And so many times I'm just like in the thick of it and I have no solution for my community. So I'm like, what do I even say right now when mentally I'm not in a good space? So, but what I found, again, going back to the pros, the more that I share like that real stuff, I feel so supported by my community. So I know that they would say, you're my biggest inspiration. Like, you support us all day, every day. But sometimes on the hard days, they're the ones supporting me. Like, they're the ones coming into my DMs as moms in the thick of motherhood being like, you got this. It is hard, but just one day at a time, girl, you got this, you know? So many days,
it's a two-way street.
Yes, many days they're my support. Yeah. And I find that to be like a huge pro. And it's not always easy to log on. Sometimes I don't have anything to say. And if I am feeling pulled in a negative direction, I usually will just take the day to log off and then come back refreshed. So,
yeah, I think that's important as well, just for our, you know, with social media nowadays, just for our mental health and so forth, to actually take that time. But I love what you say. If you build a strong enough community, they're there for you in the same way, you know, you started out being the one that was there for them. Before we kick off with a little bit more about your background, we do a fun little quick fire round on the show. Just a few things to get to know you a little bit better. So I'm going to start with that. If you're ready.
I'm nervous.
So, no, it's all easy stuff. So, Daniel, do you eat first or do you exercise first in the mornings?
Old me would have said eat first, then exercise, but new motherhood me wakes up before the baby. So I go.
So this is less of a nutritional choice and more of a practical. Yeah. Okay. What's your number one way to boost your metabolism?
You know, I like to just think training is a really good metabolism booster. And I just think like moving your body and getting your heart rate up is huge to that.
And what's your go-to dish for a healthy meal?
I'm a big salad lover. So just a big hearty salad with lots of stuff in it. But I'm eat a lot of like nutrient dense, healthy meals. So I feel like I'm all over the map with it, but I do like a good big ass salad.
Lots of good stuff in there. Yeah. What's your key to getting a good night's sleep? And I'm sure this answer is different again, now that you have a baby.
Yeah, man, I cannot even tell you sleep? The last time I slept more than 3 hours. Again, I'll answer as old me, because I'm in the thick of motherhood. It's not, won't be a good answer. As old me, key to getting a good night's sleep would be logging off your phone. You know, having a nighttime routine that slows down your brain, even if it's like a meditation or something that kind of slows it down, that helps me to get in a deep sleep. And then of course, prioritizing, like, what are your priorities? Are you going to make sleep one of them? And if so, you might have to kind of like give up a few things here and there. Now, right now I'm getting none, but that's because I have a baby. So
I hear you. And lastly, what's your biggest motivator to living a healthy life? What's the biggest motivator for you?
Well, I think just feeling good. I think when we can move our bodies and live as healthfully as we can, and that doesn't always mean like I'm eating the cleanest, you know, healthiest meals. I think there's such a balance in life with movement and with nutrition. And when you find your sweet spot and you actually enjoy the movement you're doing and enjoy the foods you're eating, you reach this harmony, if you will. And that is my motivation, is feeling good inside so that I can be the best mom, so that I can be the best entrepreneur and business owner for myself, be there for my family, etc. It overflows into every little thing in your life.
Yeah. So I love getting answers from all of different guests on these questions. It's brilliant. Just to kick things off. But let's learn a little bit more about you, because, you know, you are, as you said, an entrepreneur now. You've, you know, from personal trainer to entrepreneur, athlete as well yourself. Where did this love for fitness and training originally come from for you?
Well, I'm sure that you know this because you were an athlete, but I feel like I was an athlete my whole life. So it kind of came natural, if you will. I mean, I was doing sports from age 4 onward all the way through college. So after that, it just felt natural to continue working out in some aspect. I don't think I ever saw myself as going into the training industry, but yeah, it's something I kind of like fell in love with, gained a clientele, and then now it's become my full-time business. But I think it's hard when you're an athlete to stop your sport and figure out what you want to do. I mean, all I've ever known is being active, going to practice, competing, all the things that are involved with being an athlete. So when you just stop that cold turkey, it's like, what am I going to do now? You know? And so, and you miss the competition and you miss the team camaraderie and you miss all that. And so this was like such a natural progression to go into training and be able to help other people out on that journey and also be able to do it for a living for myself. And it's really fun that we get to work out and film workouts. It's like such a gift every day that I say that that's work, you know? So it's something I kind of fell into after being an athlete.
What were your sports?
So swimming, gymnastics, and track and field.
So I was track and field as well. And I know we share a lot of similar traits and we're both Virgos as well. And I think, you know, that comes with that, that, you know, that plan and that perfectionism and, you know, good and bad with all those different things. But I relate when I finished competing, it was that I went likewise into fitness and also sports broadcasting. So I wanted to still be around activity, athletes, training. And I think a lot of the skills that we have in, you know, turning up for training every day really transfer well to being an entrepreneur where you do then have to set your own schedule, meet deadlines, self-imposed deadlines as well. So how did you end up where you are today running a hugely successful business? You know, we'll talk about your Daniel Pacenti training guides as well. And, you know, the creating and curating the following that you have as well. How did you go from saying, no, I don't just want to be a trainer. There's more here and more opportunities for me.
Yeah. So I moved to LA after college to kind of pursue everything. But I think I was training clients in person all over LA and kind of like driving to the clients' houses. And that can fill your schedule super quick. And especially driving in LA, it's like you're dealing with traffic and it's a blah, blah, blah. So
did you get two clients a day?
You're literally like, man, I can only take this many clients a day because I'm sitting in traffic. So I had a full house schedule with training people in person. And I did that for years and years and years, but something in me wanted more. And it wasn't that I wanted more for myself, but I wanted to be able to reach more people than I could in a day in LA. It felt so small. I was like, if I can only train 8 people, you know, what gifts and talents am I leaving from the rest of the world that I could be sharing my love for training, my knowledge for training, my programs, everything. So this was back in like 2014. And my husband said, well, why don't we take the business online? And I was like, no, that's not going to happen. I don't know what I'm doing. I have no business going online. I don't know the online business. I've only ever trained clients in person. And so he really pushed me to do that and said he would be kind of fully supportive in that. Whatever you need, I'll YouTube it. I'll figure it out. I'll Google it. And so
good old YouTube. Yeah.
I said yes, not knowing what I was getting into. And we created our first training guide. And this is back in 2015. And then, I mean, it kind of has blown up from there, but it took so much time. Like the first 2-3 years in business, we were seriously figuring it out. We were trying to get the training guides out, figuring out how to market them. I was trying to figure out Instagram, you know, I didn't know how to do that. So it was such a series of steps to get to where we are now in 2022. But the first, you know, 5 years, I would say, was us building the brand. It was creating the programs, the strength programs, the HIIT programs, and something that someone could actually digest on the internet. One of the biggest things as a trainer in person is that I like to see my clients and assess my clients and see how they move and then program for them. It was a very different vibe to release programs online and say, all right, good luck. And I wanted to make sure they were detailed enough. And so, you know, my eBooks are anywhere from 100 to 200 to 300 pages of just, here's what you're going to do. I will lead you through it. Here's what you're going to do for workouts, for stretching, for cool downs. You know, I wanted to be detailed with it. So it did take me a while to launch all of them. But now we have evergreen products. We do challenges throughout the years with our community. And it's just built to be a really special community. And it's all by word of mouth. We've never spent a dime on marketing. We've never spent a dime on Facebook ads. It's just been organic word of mouth. And it's been super powerful to kind of watch it all grow.
That's incredible, because you do have, like I said before, a really strong community. When anyone launches something new, like a new website, you know, it's almost a bit of a shop in the desert, isn't it? Until,
yeah.
you know, unless people can find it, so to speak. How did you create that community? You said word of mouth, but mm-hmm. you know, how did that spread and grow from the beginning? You know, just literally getting to know Instagram, was that your main source of promotion back then?
Kind of. Yeah. I would say like a mix between Instagram and Facebook when Facebook was still a thing. I feel like now yeah. it's kind of fizzled out. But yeah, I would say Instagram was a big one. And then I had some community from other brands or companies I had worked with before to do workouts. Like my first workouts were through a YouTube company, actually. And so I was on their platform, and that helped to bring a few leads, you know. And then it's mostly, you know, it started out as 16 people. I just want to say this to anyone who's listening, like 16 people bought my first program. I made like $100, maybe $200. It has now grown to where we have thousands of women coming into the challenges, but that's because those 16 women spread the word, and then it became 30, and then they spread the word and it became 30. And it was just because they had a good experience. So though Instagram has helped us curate current day, like right now we have a hashtag, and I swear that hashtag does wonders, because people can just log into it and meet all the women in the community. It's DP Fit Crew. So it's just, you know, my community hashtag. And then we strategically do a lot of social media integration in our challenges that people have to share on. So they don't have to, but it's encouraged, like, hey, share that you're doing the challenge. And again, that becomes social media word of mouth. And so Instagram has really helped us to grow in the later years, like the last 3 years. We're able to kind of curate that through a hashtag. People spread the word. We give prizes to people who refer their friends. So it's been like organic, but also organic to the community. The community is the one saying, hey, come do this challenge with me. And most people enter in from doing a live challenge with me, and then they'll buy another guide after that or something. So it's not like our evergreen products are, you know, crushing it all year long, because people aren't necessarily finding them, but then they come into a challenge and then they can hop into the other programs and be set for a whole year's worth of workouts, you know?
And are these, so these are written and photo based workouts, ebook style. I know you do your lives on Instagram as well to support it. How would you describe the style of the, well, firstly, your style of workout and the style of workouts that, you know, your community do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm strength and HIIT based. So you'll find me doing a lot of strength training and then high intensity interval training. So the way that I break it down in our challenges is they have 4 workout days and 3 rest days. And it's a lower body strength day, an upper body strength day, a rest day, and 2 conditioning, full body conditioning days off the back end. So you consider that high intensity interval training, maybe like an EMOM or an AMRAP or just a full body conditioning day. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, we'll do something more low key. I'll have them come onto the FitOn app, do a stretch with me, do a stretch with you. They've done those before. So I kind of just like, it's 4 workout days, 3 rest days, and that's how I program it. It depends, though, what program you do with me. I also have a really high intensity program that's like 6 workout days per week, and it's specific for runners or endurance athletes. I have a treadmill program. You know, there's lots of different options, but how we do it is, yes, pictures. So it's PDF format. It is different from the FitOn app. A lot of people come over from the FitOn app and they're like, will I be able to do this? Because it's not video. And there is something to be said about PDFs. I know they're kind of going out of style, but my community still loves to see a picture, just turn on their own music, jam out and do the protocol either as written, or they can add to it or take away from it. So it brings some flexibility when it's not on video, because they can just see it and figure out what they want to do to tweak it and make it their own.
Yeah. And there's some burpees in there, I assume, as well. Danielle is known for her burpees.
Oh, yeah. I love it. Plenty of burpee variations in there. It's so funny because the last shoot that we did for FitOn, it was we were like working on the moves, just the moves, and I had so many burpee variations in there, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a breeze, we're only doing 1 minute of the move, and then I had like 6 burpees back to back.
Oh gosh, yeah, no, I sort of felt the same with my program. So for people that don't know, when we film for FitOn, our app that we're a part of, we're filming however many workouts, 6-7 workouts a day, or in this case, goodness, 50-60 odd moves a day, back to back to back to back to back. Mm-hmm. So you know what you know someone might do over a few weeks, we're doing in the space of a day. So it's done. And you were doing when you were heavily pregnant as well, which is absolutely
not as many.
Incredible.
I didn't get as many in a day, but it's so funny you say that because I think people honestly don't understand that we shoot that many workouts in a day. Like it is back to back to back to back to back. And they think we're doing this over time. And I'm like, no, I just literally did 16 workouts in 2 days.
Yeah. Yeah. There's hair and makeup on set to make us look a bit more fresh each time we start the next one. But it's always so energizing. I absolutely love it. And of course, you have a whole range of workouts on the app, as I do as well. When you got pregnant, you decided to, and I wanted to really pick your brain on pre and postnatal training for those people listening, that I think it can be a little bit of a gray area for a lot of people. Like, how do I train differently? Do I train differently? What are the things to consider? So first off, I guess, sort of what are the main, let's start when someone's, you know, becomes pregnant, what are the main considerations when you find out you're pregnant and you're an active person, let's say, that likes to exercise? What, if anything, do you need to start doing differently?
Yes, totally. This is a great question. I'm really passionate about this topic because I think it is something that is a gray area. And there's a lot of different opinions about it. A lot of them are old school. And so we need to kind of move into this new wave of training while pregnant, because back in the day, it was like, you're not training, you're not moving your body, you're on bed rest your whole pregnancy, even if you were healthy, even if it was fine. Yeah. So I think we need to come into this kind of new mindset. And it helps when trainers are talking about it that are, of course, pre and postnatal certified. But, you know, some doctors are still telling their, you know, pregnant women, you can't work out, you can't lift weights. Now, if it is a normal, healthy pregnancy, and you did work out prior and you are cleared for exercise, you can still exercise, you can still strength train, you can still HIIT train, you can go for a run if that's what you did. A couple of considerations that I think are important. So first of all, get clearance from your OBGYN. If there is something internally that is wrong, she's going to tell you, she's going to say, you know, you need to take it easy. If not, she's going to clear you for exercise. Then you need to ask yourself, what did I do before? If you were not a runner before pregnancy and you decide you want to get into it, pregnancy just isn't the time to like pick up something you haven't done before. So I always tell my clients that, like, hey, what were you doing before? Let's integrate it in now. So I always say, what did you do before pregnancy? If you strength train, HIIT train, you can continue doing that if you're cleared to do so. Couple things to keep in mind are temperature. So you want to stay away from heat, especially in the first trimester. It's a bit of a touchy topic because it is the time when most miscarriages happen. It is the time when your risks are a little higher, if that makes sense. In the first, I would say 12 to 16 weeks. But really throughout pregnancy, you know,
the factor with heat then?
With heat, you just don't want to overheat your body. Your body is trying to obviously create life. And so you don't want to be in a heated state. So like Bikram yoga, or for instance, I was in Arizona, it's 109 degrees, 114 degrees here right now, Fahrenheit. It's hot. Uh-huh. You know, you don't want to overheat your body. So paying attention to that, again, you can sweat. A lot of people have come to me and say, can I sweat? Yes, you can sweat. Sweat is your body's way of regulating your temperature. So it is normal for pregnant women to sweat. They can sweat, but just be aware if you feel overheated. Second thing is heart rate. So the guidelines of heart rate on the internet, if you look on the internet, it's going to say stay below 140 beats per minute. This for us would be like, possibly maybe getting into the I'm breathing semi a little bit like 140 140 is, I hate that they give you that, and here's why. I'll tell you why. So nowadays they're saying stay between a 6 to 8 ratings of perceived exertion. So if you and me were working mm-hmm. out and I could still talk to you, but we were working out, that's mm-hmm. probably like a good sweet spot. When yeah. you get to the point where yeah. you cannot breathe, you cannot talk, that's a good time to slow it down. So I like to describe it to my clients mm-hmm. as that instead of using 140. And the reason I don't like using 140 is because if you take a super fit person, like 140 for me, I would not feel like I'm working. I know that my target mm-hmm. or my max is in the 175, 180. So yeah. maybe I'm going to be more 155, 160, and that might be my sweet spot. It is very dependent on the person. It's very dependent on your fitness level, your resting heart rate, your target heart rate. There's too many factors to just say, stay below 140. So during my pregnancy, yeah. I decided to stay below 165. Okay. Now that might be super high for someone else. So
that's pure exhaustion for somebody yes. else. Yeah. For a lot of people. Yeah. Yes. So it's individual.
So yeah. it is individual. Mm. And I would actually take out the heart rate completely. And a lot of probably trainers would say this, pre-postnatal specialist, pelvic floor physical therapist, and stick yeah. in that scale, 6 to 8 ratings of perceived exertion. If you're feeling gassed, it's because you are. Stop, take a break. It doesn't mean you've done anything wrong. It doesn't mean you're going to hurt anything. Yeah. It just means you need to stop and recover. So that's the second thing is heart rate, heat, yeah. heart rate, weights. A lot of, again, nuances here, but if you lifted weights before your pregnancy, you can continue lifting the weights during your pregnancy. You're going to have modifications by trimester, especially with core movements. So core movements yeah. are the biggest modifiers in second and third. I personally didn't feel as much core modification was needed until the third trimester. So that's anywhere right. from 30 to 40 weeks. Yeah. And, you know, it's a lot.
What does that look like? What does that core modification look like? Is it like you're no longer doing crunches or you're not yeah. laying on your front or, you know, what are the changes?
Yeah. So, you know, you have the abdominal pressure that you're going to feel in core movements like planks or push-ups or yeah. A plank row or yes, back yeah. lying abs. A lot of back lying stuff is going to be kind of cut out during third trimester. Yeah. There's a multitude of reasons for this. Number one, it starts to just not feel good. As you get bigger and your belly gets bigger, it starts to not feel good. You're going to feel that pressure. Internally, there's actually a lot going on that you may not feel. And so you could do it and you could say, this feels fine. But ultimately, you might be causing some internal pressure. You might be causing something like diastasis recti later after you deliver the baby. You have the gap, the separation.
That separation.
Yeah. So you don't want to chance it. It's not worth risking it. There's so many great exercises you can do. So with core movements, I always tell my clients the easiest way to modify as much as you can is to elevate the surface so that you're taking the weight off of, you know, weight bearing on the ground. If you're doing a push-up, more of your weight is down. If you're on a wall or an elevated surface, you're going to be raised up and take off some of that pressure. Also, knees are great. Tabletop position, dropping your knees down to support your core and what's going on as your belly grows.
That's fascinating because, again, it's an area I think some people can be scared. And it's with what you've said, it's probably not enough to just listen to your body. There are things you have to follow because you don't know the internal effects that are going on. So it sounds like you're almost going back to, if you're a bit more of a beginner, the modifications we give for beginners in terms of like elevation and so forth. Yeah,
totally that. And also, like, to your point, I tell people, listen to your body during pregnancy because it does speak volumes. And if you're in tune with it, when something doesn't feel right, you're going to feel that. So especially with strength training and HIIT training, if you're doing HIIT and you're totally gassed out of breath, the hormones are cranking, like you just don't feel like you're getting dizzy, just tune in. Pregnancy is not the time to push through and let that voice come through and say, you got this, girl, keep going. Pregnancy is the time to be like, hey, no need to be a hero today. Just you moved your body. High five. On with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that as well. And then I guess a really important part as well is in the delivery process itself, giving birth. How beneficial is it to have created a strong body, you know, and be in tune with your body as you were just talking about? How much did that help you?
Gosh, I cannot express how much it's helped, not just with delivery, but postpartum as well. Like postpartum, you are in the throes of carrying your baby, unloading car seats and bending down and doing quick movements with, you know, your baby that could be anywhere from 5 to 15 pounds. And it's a lot and it requires strength as well as delivery. Delivery absolutely requires strength, and people choose to have different labor experiences and how, if they get an epidural, if they don't, if they're delivering naturally, there's lots of different ways it can happen. But I've never been more grateful for a strong foundation, which is our core.
Yeah.
And I'm not just talking core movements during pregnancy, because for the most part, you do start to dial that back at the end. I'm talking that 360 breathing, that pelvic floor activations. And again, you can find this on the Fit On app, because I did kind of a 360 breathing core activations, but I can't express how important that is for women during pregnancy, is to be able to learn how to breathe properly. That sounds weird. Most people think they can do it. Like, hello, I breathe every day, Danielle, I'm good. Yeah. Listen, when you connect your pelvic floor to your breath, it is an unstoppable force during labor. And to be able to practice that every day for just 5 minutes, that 360 breathing, that rib expansion, that pelvic floor activation, it will change your birth process, because anything could happen. And that is true, but it will help. It will help in the healing process. It will help if things go fairly normally. It will help to heal. It will help to deliver. And it will then help you afterwards when you're trying to do those active daily things with your newborn.
Sort of then going on to postnatal. Mm-hmm. And firstly, I feel there's this pressure, the societal the bounce back.
Yeah.
We hear this a lot, you know, let's bounce back, you know, get my pre-body baby and all the rest of it. And I think a lot of women feel that pressure to try and get back in the skinny jeans and get their body back very quickly. How quickly is healthy to do this?
I mean, my honest response to that is that I hate the bounce back culture. I hate that women feel pressure to look a certain way after they've just gone through 9 months of carrying a baby, and then postpartum, which I'm now in for 3.5 months, is the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I don't even want that narrative in my head, because it just puts undue pressure on women. So if I'm talking about a timeline, I'm not talking about a timeline to bounce back to any body that I originally had. I'm truly moving for mental purposes at this point. I'm moving because it helps give me energy. I'm moving because it helps me to stay strong and keep my body healthy for my baby and to raise my baby. So shifting the narrative, it's not that I don't want to answer your question, but I also feel that if it took you 9 months to build that baby, let's give it a full year to even remotely feel like yourself. Because you're not going to feel like yourself postpartum. I'm here to share the reality that it's pretty wild with hormones and adjusting to this new life. And the last thing you need is focus on your body. Like, your body is doing some freaking incredible things every day for you postpartum. And so is your brain. So whatever you need to do to keep both of those things healthy, it's going to look different every day. When you're sleep deprived, trust me, the last thing you're going to want to do is work out. But if it's just a walk or a stretch or whatever you can do, showing your body grace during the postpartum period is the one thing I will preach forevermore. Like, let's not talk about a bounce back. Let's actually just get through this period, keep yourself sane if you can, and mentally check in on yourself. You know, postpartum anxiety and depression are very real things. And I think the focus kind of needs to be more on mentality than what's going on physically.
Yeah, I love that, because I think it's just because there's pressures out there, and whether it's pressure people put on themselves or the judgment from other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, as someone, you know, like you, like myself and many others, we've always been very in control of our body throughout our whole lives, you know, how it looks, how it moves, what it does, all the rest of it, our career, et cetera. And then suddenly, not only during the pregnancy process where you don't have that same degree of control, your body is growing a human a little human in there. And afterwards, it's probably more of a mentally challenging thing than it is anything else. And I know for you, you look to me now like, Danielle, you know, you've had your baby and you look incredible. You really do. And I know you've put the work in and, you know, and you kept that training going throughout, but I'm sure internally things feel different.
Yeah, totally.
And that's sort of the, sounds like what you're talking to a little bit there, because from the outside it's like, well, you look great, you know, but internally I'm sure there's all those things you're talking about where your body is still needs that year to get back to what it was feeling prior.
And it's still healing and you're still healing. And so that's why too, it's just, it's a comment I almost don't like. Like people will say it though. They'll say, you look great. Like, wow. I mean, I almost feel like it's sometimes the first comment that comes out of women's mouth to other women, because they're being complimentary and it's amazing. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But in my brain, we're going through so much other stuff postpartum that the bigger compliment is like even saying something like, hey, how are you doing? Or like, you're doing so good. Keep it up. I can imagine that it's hard, but you're doing so good. And so again, I'm trying to kind of shift the narrative to say like, hey, even if she looks great, she could be struggling inside. And so for me, people will look at me and they'll be like, did you really have a baby? And I will say genetics play a role in that 100%. I mean, yes, I work hard. Yes, I move my body. But at the same time, like there's many days that up here, it's really hard for me because I do have postpartum anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so I move for the PPA. I move for sometimes those darker feeling days. Like that's what I'm moving for. Is to kind of work through some of that and regain energy. So I love the thought of just really shifting this narrative. And I even challenge women to not compliment or either direction women's bodies after pregnancy, because it is truly the last thing that I want to be on women's mind. Like, yes, it can be there. Yes, you can move your body. Yes, you can maybe want to get to a certain point down the road, but let's try not to put those pressures on women either, because postpartum, it's just like every day you're trying to make it through and be positive and be there for your little baby. And so your body just goes through a lot.
That's for someone like me that hasn't had a baby yet. That's actually something that's you know, valuable to know, you know, for my friends and people I know that have had babies, because obviously it's an instinct to compliment someone that they look good, because it's this amazement that you've been through this 9 months and wow, you know, and it is almost complimenting the hard work and the dedication to the movement and, and what's gone before. But yeah, that makes complete sense what you're saying. There's so much more going on mentally and emotionally that you want to feel, you know, cheered on and rewarded for. So no, I love that message. Putting your sort of Danielle trainer, you know, trainer hat back on in terms of postnatally, what are the training you know, aside from physically making it onto the mat or whatever it might be, what are the training considerations with core, with that separation you might have had, or what you should and shouldn't do postnatally, or if there are any sort of hard and fast rules?
Totally. And I love talking about this, and I definitely don't want you to think you can't train after, like, of course people are going to want to hop back into training. And I did too. I was really eager to do that. So couple things I want to say is it is very important for women to go see pelvic floor physical therapists. And I will preach that over and over again. Your clearance from your OBGYN is literally a 15-minute appointment. They check you once and they say, all right, you're cleared. And there's no other considerations that are made. And this is not to bash OBGYNs, but it needs to be said, they don't do a whole lot of checking. They don't even check for diastasis recti, the separation at that appointment before they clear people. So I tell all my clients, go see a pelvic floor physical therapist. They can actually exam you. They can see what's going on in your pelvic floor, because that's going to be the thing. I mean, you're essentially stretched open, right? It's going to take a while for that to get back functioning again. And all the things we do with exercise, as you know, and I'm just going to describe it like a Kegel, even though I don't love to do this, but like when we're exercising, we are squeezing, pulling up, right? Mm-hmm. That functionality is very different after you deliver a baby vaginally. If you got a C-section, same thing. I mean, you're going to be working on healing your abdomen. You're going to be working on healing your pelvic floor. So seeing a physical therapist that specializes in that can help you so much to figure out if you have any problems with the pelvic floor that you need to heal before you get back to exercise. Then from that point on, if you get cleared, you're going to continue doing the pelvic floor activations. You're going to continue doing the 360 breathing, and then you're going to bring the 360 breathing into your workouts. I would say for me, I had two tears, so it took a while to heal, but body weight activity felt good at first, probably for the first 4 to 6 weeks. So I wasn't lifting weights, because the weights puts additional pressure on. Yeah. So if you can do things like easy walking, stretching, pelvic floor activations, body weight workouts, maybe some squats, some good mornings, some air punches, some body weight bicep curls, things like that are great, are a great ease in. And then I would say, if you're feeling great, you know, 3 months in, 2 months in, that's when you can kind of start adding those weights back in. I did add weights back in week 7 because I felt good and because my pelvic floor physical therapist was like, you look great. This is not often the case. It really isn't. So you've got to just, I tell women, be aware, go see the physical therapist. Don't just rely on your OBGYN because you could end up doing some serious damage if your pelvic floor isn't ready to take the impact.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And shifting the conversations to a nutritional perspective now, you know, there used to be this old idea that, you know, I'm eating for two now when you're pregnant, which we know is, you know, not essentially true. You're not, you're doubling your, as much as some people would like to, doubling your food intake. What were the biggest considerations diet-wise during your pregnancy and then for the sort of healing post-pregnancy as well?
Yeah, so during pregnancy, I had... Many women will experience morning sickness on some level for the first 12 weeks, which is really difficult to keep food down. During that phase, I always tell people, do whatever you can. If it is saltines, if it is a bagel, if it is candy, I mean, seriously, you're just trying to get anything you can in and keep
it
down.
Fuel.
Yes.
Yeah.
So first trimester, I say all bets are off. Do the best you can. Do the best that you possibly can, girl. If you don't experience it, then I would say like there are certain nutritional needs that are great to have. I am not a nutritionist or a dietitian, so this isn't really like my forte, but I did follow some incredible nutrition accounts for prenatal and postnatal that I highly recommend. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but I would say that is follow a prenatal nutritionist because they can really break it down. Like eggs were a big thing for me. Eggs have choline in it, which is a nutrient you really need during pregnancy. So I ate a lot of eggs during my second and third trimester. And overall, yes, your caloric needs do increase, but not substantially until the third trimester. So people in the first and second, yes, that's a comment people make. And if you want to eat more, like I'm all about it. And listen to your body and what you need. Like there was many days I was craving more food. And ultimately, you just want to be fueled for you and for the little baby that you're making. So listen to your body, listen to your food aversions, also cravings. I had both. I had aversions where I couldn't even look at that food, like salads. I just got done telling you I love salads. Could not eat a salad during my pregnancy, not one greens. Like I was like, I cannot do it. It's so gross.
Wow.
Now, as far as cravings, I craved fried chicken. That's not something I've ever craved in a long time, but I allowed it to happen. So again, listening to that without judging yourself is the biggest thing during pregnancy. Like instead of judging yourself or being like, I'm going to go to Chick-fil-A or Taco Bell in this first trimester, do it if you need to. And then also you can balance it out on the other side with some good stuff. So, so keep the balance, watch your nutrient needs with a prenatal nutritionist. And then for postpartum, I will say if you're breastfeeding, you are going to have to increase your caloric intake because you want your milk supply to stay there. This is going to very much depend on if you choose to breastfeed or formula feed, which in my opinion, fed is best with the baby. So no guilt there. I am on a breastfeeding journey. So I have had to increase my calorie intake more than what I'm used to keep my milk supply up. So to that, I say there are also nutrient needs postpartum. And that's something that you can also see a prenatal postpartum nutritionist for just to kind of dial that in. But I've been eating a lot of oats, a lot of carbs. That helps. There's certain things that help with milk supply. So I've kind of been on the increase my milk supply diet, if you will. And it's a lot of oats and a lot of protein.
Not heard of that one before.
I mean, listen, I don't know. I didn't know about it before I was in it. And then I was like, shoot, I've got to increase my supply. So there's just different needs as postpartum, depending on what you choose to do.
Yeah, it sort of brings me to sort of talk about metabolism as well, because our podcast, the Health Hack Podcast, is sponsored by Lumen, which is a handheld metabolic device, which using your breath can measure your state of carbohydrate, fat, protein, what substance you're burning, etc. So I found it fascinating how my metabolism can change day by day and what fuel I'm burning. I just wonder the impact on your metabolism having, you know, of the breastfeeding, like you say, that need for the excess calories. Yeah. But how's your metabolism changed now that you are probably running around like crazy, you know, in terms of everything that needs to be done, but the actual physiological need as well?
Yeah, it's like I'm not a tracker. I know you know this about me, but like I don't track metabolism or calories, or I'm more of like an intuitive food freedom eater. So I don't track a lot, but I will say hormonally, things are different, and hormones can do a number on your body, both from a physical standpoint for workouts and then also that nutritional standpoint. So for me, I think the hormone fluctuations have been the hardest, because sometimes I can't tell, like, am I really hungry or am I just eating to eat and like eating for emotional reasons or whatever. And so kind of like tapping into all those different aspects postpartum has been important to kind of stay present during the meals, because otherwise I'm just like shoveling food and trying to get it all in. But I would say your metabolism absolutely changes with all the hormone changes and everything you go through in the 9 months. And then also go ahead and say about 9 months to a year out, I'm sure they're still adjusting and changing all the time. Yeah. So yeah, I can't speak to the exact science of how the metabolism changes, but I am willing to wager that it does multiple times throughout pregnancy and then postpartum.
I think hormones is sort of a whole nother podcast conversation in itself. The changes just, you know, in general during all stages of life, for example. But your diet as a whole, because I think a lot of people that follow your workouts would say, well, sort of pregnancy aside, what sort of style of diet or eating do you ordinarily subscribe to? What's your sort of go-to? You know, talk us through a day.
This is probably like unpopular, I would say, but I just don't subscribe to any diet. I did that for a long time, and I lived a life of restriction on many levels nutritionally, and it was just not a healthy place for me to be. So 5 years ago, I changed all of that, because ultimately my adrenals were tanking. I was not able to get pregnant. I did not have a period, you know, all red flags. And so I had to heal my relationship with food. I had to heal my hormones. I had to get my body back to a place where it was happy, because it just wasn't happy and I was fighting against it. So I now live a life of food freedom and intuitive eating. And I'm just in tune with what my body wants. You know, I think people would look at my diet and say she eats what she wants. You know, she's eating a mixture of good things, but then also like lots of things people would consider bad. But I'm trying not to put morality on food, good or bad. It's all nutrients for the body. Some are more dense than others. Some contribute greatly and some don't. And that's kind of how I look at it. But I do try to balance it out. And I am better mentally this way when I am able to eat the foods that I truly do love and enjoy. Period.
I think it's that word balance, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, we sometimes we're trying to go too far in one direction or the other. But yeah, I like the whole intuitive approach that you take. And I could talk to you for so much longer, and hopefully we'll have a chance to do so on set or wherever it might be next. But thank you so much for your insights. You are a true inspiration, you know, both in terms of your business and personally and everything you're doing in your community. So appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was good to talk like outside of the shoots.
I know, it really was. So what's coming up for you next, and where can people find you?
Yeah, so I'm mostly on Instagram at Danielle Pacenti. So you can find me there on stories doing my thing every day. And then we have our fall challenge coming up, which is our biggest of the year. That's in September. I think registration is like late August. And other than that, you can find my workouts on my website, on Instagram, or on the FitOn app.
Brilliant. Love it. Thank you so much, Danielle. I'll talk to you very soon. Take care.
Thank you for having me. Bye.
And thank you so much for listening to the Health Hack Podcast with myself, Caroline Pierce. We'll be back in the fall with brand new ways to help you hack your health. So make sure you subscribe or follow us so you're the first to know when a new episode is released. In the meantime, please rate and leave a review to help others seeking inspiring stories to find us. The Health Hack is an Insanity Podcast production and powered by Lumen. See you soon.